You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to Here District. I'm Marcus Johnson here in the Wooden Award Room at the LA Athletic Club, joined by my son, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem in college basketball history to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. There's been other players that have won championships, the Bibbies, Mike and Henry, the Mays, Scott and Sean. The Waltons, did Luke win a championship?
I don't think he did. They checked on it and Luke did not.
Got to the championship game against Duke.
With Gil.
With Gilbert Arenas and that crew, but did not win it. So close, but no cigar. But here we are, here, District. And yes, in the background, you see a whole lot of photos. Chris, what are these photos, man? Tell us.
Some of the greatest college basketball players to ever lace them up.
Yeah.
The Wooden Award winners from over the years, the first to the last.
Yeah.
Women's and mids, right?
Yeah, when did it start?
1977.
Yes.
This guy over here, Marcus Johnson, the first winner of the John R. Wooden.
Wow. Wow.
It was amazing hearing. First of all, it's amazing touring the facility.
Yeah.
Growing up here as a youngster, you used to bring me up here all the time.
Yep.
20, 30 years ago, so it looks totally different.
Yeah.
So state of the art. So nice.
Yeah.
Such a great staff. And the room we just conducted that interview with. I mean,
right.
it just feels like so much history in this place.
Yeah.
Everywhere you turn.
Well, it's always been one of my favorite places to work out, the LA Athletic Club right in downtown LA, just because of all the history. And I don't know what year this place was built, but it had to be in the 20s or 30s and maybe even before. But you just get this sense, man.
It's a vibe.
It's a vibe. And I'm not talking like a ghost vibe or anything negative either. It's all a positive.
Not like the Pfister.
Not like the Pfister. Not like the Pfister. The Pfister is haunted. I'm telling you, the Pfister is haunted in Milwaukee, but that's a whole other show. But no, but this place here, man, it's got all this great history, great tradition, the LA Athletic Club. And so the Wooden Award was started in 1975, conceived in 1975. The LA Athletic Club, Duke Llewellyn, the Hathaway family, the people that ran the LA Athletic Club. So they wanted to give an award to the top college basketball player named after Coach Wooden because of not only the great things that he had done as a coach, 10 championships in 12 years, but just the human being that he was and what he stood for in terms of greatness as a person. The pyramid of success has been a blueprint for living for so many people. So they started the award 1975. They did not give it out to the first winner, Chris, until 1977. Now, a little context, 1976, I was going to go pro. Larry Brown came, talked to me. I went down to Denver, watched the Nuggets play the New Jersey Nets or New York Nets. I think at that time they were Julius Erving and that crew in the ABA Championship Series in 1976. I was going pro.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that deal kind of fell apart because of the merger. Carl Shear, some other things happened because of the merger. I was contemplating whether to come back to school or go to the NBA with the Detroit Pistons. And my mother found out that they were giving away the Wooden Award, the very first Wooden Award in 1977. And she had the brilliant ideas only mamas could have of, hey, why don't you be the first winner? And so I set my sights on becoming the first winner of the Wooden Award. The dunk shot came back into college basketball after a 10-year hiatus. And the rest is history. I was able to be the first winner. And it's the crowning achievement. I can say that. The crowning achievement of my basketball career is being named the first winner of the Wooden Award.
So why would you say it's the crowning achievement?
Well, you know, I had a lot of great things that happened. Won a city championship.
Was it Hall of Fame, the College Basketball Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, yes. No, without question. Now, look, I'm part of the LA City Hall of Fame, the Crenshaw High Hall of Fame, the Southern California Hall of Fame, the California Hall of Fame, the Wisconsin Hall of Fame, College Basketball Hall of Fame, the UCLA Hall of Fame. All of them mean a whole lot. Every Hall of Fame except that other one. Yeah, I've been how can you be a Hall of Famer in 10 different Hall of Fames and not be a member of the? I digress.
Unbelievable.
But the Naismith, but a 3-time finalist. I got to hold the record for being the most finalist.
You'll get it
in the history. So, beside the point. The point is that being the first winner of the Wooden Award, man, means so much to me, and it's something that I set my sights on, Chris. My senior year, UCLA, playing for Gene Bartow. And, the year didn't turn out how I would have loved it to, winning a national championship, getting to the Final Four. We got upset by
Idaho State.
You like the Chris was,
it's so unbelievable.
Well, so you'd always tease me about that until they lost to
Princeton. But it's so don't say that too loud. Why are you going to bring that up?
So I had something to come.
Bring Princeton up.
The Princeton back door, the Princeton cut, Petey Carell, and then all that. And here's a little bit of trivia for you.
I've got some trivia.
Here's some trivia for you. If you want to, like, slow it down frame by frame on that back
door. This is ridiculous.
Chris had a bad ankle. Chris is the weak side defender. Chris gets a fingernail on the basketball.
You can actually slow it down. You'll see the trajectory.
You'll see the rotation of the ball.
But it goes in.
But the ball still goes in. So when they talk about horseshoes and hand grenades, man, it was close. But what were we talking about?
Horseshoes and hand grenades.
Yeah.
No, I'm getting to the bottom of that. What is horseshoes and hand grenade? What does that mean?
Close only counts.
Oh.
Close only counts. Okay. And horseshoes and hand grenades.
You've always used that.
Horseshoes.
Yeah, I deal with that.
Horseshoes and hand grenades, man. I mean, you know, horseshoes, the closer you get, the more points you get. Hand grenades, you know.
The hand grenades, man, just leave her alone.
Yeah. They did the whole Hurt Locker, Hurt Locker kind of thing going on. But horseshoes and hand grenades. But the point is that it's the highlight. Coach Wooden, first winner
for sure.
You know, I used to always kind of self deprecating kind of way say I'm like the Jay Berwanger of
who's that?
Little Jay Berwanger.
Who's Jay Berwanger?
I'm the Jay Berwanger of the Wooden Award.
Who is Jay?
So I mean, put it together. Who would you? Who? Just use your comments.
I don't know. I've never heard that.
What is a Wooden Award?
Basketball. So what is Berwanger?
Berwanger is a football player.
Okay, so he was the first Heisman.
First Heisman.
I thought Heisman was the first Heisman.
They named it after Heisman, but Jay Berwanger. The Chicago somebody. I forget who played for, but Jay Berwanger. But no. But for me, playing at UCLA, playing for Coach Wooden. And it's funny, Bill Walton, the late great Bill Walton, just always like every time we'd appear at a Wooden Award ceremony, he'd always kind of rub it in. And when I'd mention that, you know, I'm the first guy that played for Coach Wooden that won the award. He's like, well, I'd rather have played for him for 4 years than win an award named by him. But that's Bill. But for me, you know, it's such an honor of high esteem, man, and you know, I've got it on full display in my house, in my den, and it just means so much to me.
Let me ask you this. Okay. You said that Coach Wooden's pyramid of success,
yeah,
it felt abstract in college or something along those lines.
Yeah.
When did...
Is that
Coach Wooden? Yeah, you used abstract. When did Coach Wooden's lessons crystallize for you? Post UCLA.
Well, that's a great question, man. It's interesting, and you know this as someone approaching 50 years old.
Damn. Wow. Kevin Hart. Damn.
Wow. but the longer you live, the more adversities that you go through, the more challenges that show up in your life, the more you start reflecting and remembering things that my parents told me, and what Coach was trying to pass along to us. At UCLA with that pyramid of success. Now, he understood. He understood that we were like 17, 18 years old, that we had our wild oats to sow and all that good stuff, and that those lessons. So he would always say that he didn't measure how well of a job he did in terms of nurturing a player until 15 years after they graduate and see what kind of productive citizens that they were.
Yeah.
And he's had some major, you know, between Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Andy Hill. You know, a guy that we both know is a good friend of ours. But Andy was a guy that went from UCLA, a bench player, not playing at all, to writing a book, Be Quick But Don't Hurry, with Coach Wooden. Andy produced a bunch of shows on TV, the Merlin Olsen Show, Touched by an Angel, Dr. Quinn, all these shows, all these great kind of family shows on CBS. Andy Hill was the guy that shepherded those in to the network. So, but you can just go on down the list of, you know, Fred Slaughter, great lawyer who represented Jamal Wilkes and a bunch of other guys as an attorney who did a lot of good, positive things. Willie Knowles was the guy that was my mentor and agent and friend who passed away a few years back. But he's the guy that taught me so much about life and business and the ways of the business world. So so that's the thing. Coach Wooden looked at his players at 17, 18, understanding mm-hmm. that those life lessons wouldn't sink in mm-hmm. until some adversity showed up. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, the pyramid of success started to make more and more sense about, you know, self-control, about adaptability, about all these things that you can take in life to help you kind of soldier through the challenges and the obstacles that if you keep living, a shorty sharp in your life. Yeah, so there's a story about Coach Wooden. It's right after the Bruins had beaten Memphis State in St. Louis, the game that Bill Walton went 21 for 22. Greg Lee had like 15 assists, an NCAA record. But so I'm sitting in the den of my home in Los Angeles, and my father and I just watched the game, and all of a sudden the phone rings. And so my father answers the phone and tells me, "Papa Stalba," that's what he called me, "Papa Stalba, it's for you." So I'm like, okay. So I get on the phone, hello. And it's Coach Wooden on the other line. And Coach Wooden says, "Marcus, did you watch the game?" I'm like, "Yes, Coach, I watched the game." He's like, "Well, we'd love for you to be a part of this, Marcus. You think you'd like to be a part of this next year?" I'm like, "Yes, Coach, I'd love to be a part of that." So I don't know who came up with that as a recruiting angle, but man, it sure worked with me, because right then and there, I was sold the fact that Coach Wooden, the greatest coach in basketball history, would take the time immediately following a championship game to give me a call and ask me to be a part of the great UCLA program. It was a done deal right then.
We recently, yesterday, got the news that former Bruin, he didn't play for Coach Wooden.
Yeah.
But he was recruited by Coach Wooden. David Greenwood passed away. Loved Greenwood. Wonderful man. Talk a little bit about Greenwood and your enduring memories of him.
Well, David Greenwood. So there's four guys. Kiki Vandeweghe, David Greenwood, Roy Hamilton, and Brad Holland. All UCLA Bruins. Brad Holland was on that Laker championship team. Magic Johnson's rookie year, all first rounders. David, I think, number two pick of the Bulls. Kiki, a first rounder. I think with Dallas and wound up in Denver. Roy Hamilton got picked like 12 or 13 by Detroit.
Dang.
But they were the last group of players that Coach Wooden actually recruited. And so Coach winds up retiring in 1975. So we all played with Gene Bartow in 1976. But they were the last group of guys that Coach recruited. So that gives you an idea of their talent level. But David Greenwood specifically, man, it hit me like a ton of bricks out of left field, man, if I can mix some metaphors. But when I found out, someone posted.
Ben Bosch?
No. Eldridge Rakasner. So Eldridge Rakasner sent me a text and quoted Ben Bosch of the LA Times in that little blurb that he had on Twitter. And at first I thought Eldridge was talking about Deion Brown, a Crenshaw high great that went to Washington and passed away a couple of months ago. Then I read it again, and he was talking about David Greenwood had passed away. So that was a real shock. But David Greenwood, man, let me just say this. David Greenwood went to Verbum Day, played for the great George McQuarrie, played for John Sneed at Verbum Day. He was one of the greatest high school players I'd ever seen in my life. One of the greatest college players. He came in, man, with this fro, Chris, so big, 6'9", 6'10", with this big fro that would, like, he had a hard time, you know, keeping his head up. That fro was so big. His head be bombing like that because that fro was so big. He and Roy Hamilton both. 6'9", 6'10", way before his time. He had handles. He's the first guy I saw at his size, Chris, come down full speed, kind of a KD before KD, go through his legs right to left, pull up from 20 feet, swish.
So let me ask you this. Well, how does he compare to Mickey Johnson as far as the handles and the floor gang at being 6'10"?
I mean, you know,
Mickey, that's my frame of reference for that era, yeah. Mickey Johnson, because he was serious.
Yeah, well, Mickey probably had a better career, but Mickey went to Aurora. He went to Aurora College in Illinois. Had a better NBA career.
Yeah.
But in terms of coming out of high school collegiately, yeah. Greenwood, I thought, in my mind, was going to be one of the, and I say this without any hyperbole, I thought David Greenwood would be one of the greatest forwards in NBA history. Because he's 6'9", 6'10", he's long, he's jumping out the gym, he's dunking on people, Chris, yeah. Talking trash. David would just get it. You know, that's it. Talked trash to Wilt one time.
No, he didn't.
They got Wilt so upset. I told you about that 2-on-2 game that Wilt told me to pass the ball to him every time down on a kind of a casual 2-on-2 game, the men's gym, after we got through with the run. And Wilt dunked on David about 6 or 7 times in a row. And Wilt was about
50 years old?
45, 46, yeah. You know. But David precipitated that with the trash. Hey, well, come on, old man, get this jumper.
Let's see your face,
Wilt. And Wilt was like, "Marcus, come here, man. Give me the ball every single time. Give me the ball."
That's how Wilt's talking. Yeah, that's how Wilt's talking.
Marcus, give me the ball every single time. I want to show this young stuff. And he thumped around up dunking on him a few times. But anyway, David, man, was such a force of nature on the collegiate scene at UCLA. Had a solid freshman year, but it really came into his own his sophomore year. My senior year, we played together. And his game was ahead of his time. That's all I can, you know, like Mickey Johnson. He was a fluid six. He was KD before KD. 6'9", fluid, jump shooting. Another quick story. My senior year, so David and I always went at it. And David, you know, he was hard for me to score on because he's 6'9", just as quick. He was long. I blow by him on the baseline in practice. I get underneath the hoop, and I corkscrew for a dunk. He goes up to challenge. I wind up dunking, but he hit me hard enough to knock me off balance. I fall back, and I twist my knee. This is my senior year, like around late November, early December. I'm out about 2 weeks. I don't know if I'm going to play again that year. My knee is really, really messed up at that point. And David was really apologetic about it. I'm sorry, Cap. I'm so sorry. But the point is that I wound up playing that year and having a great year and bouncing back and working hard to get back. But man, David, I was shocked when he got to Chicago that they used him more as a prototypical big man. Don't let him shoot jumpers. Keep him in the post. Play defense, rebound, and let some of these other guys flourish offensively. But David, to me, man, if he'd have been in today's game, he'd average 25 a game and be one of the greats that you talk about.
Who was his coach? Kevin Lockery or something?
Oh, man. Either Jerry Sloan.
Oh, Jerry Sloan was on there?
Yeah. Someone like that back in those days. So it was one of those hard-ass kind of old-school dudes. You're a big man. You rebound.
Real quick, I wanted to get your take on my top 10 forwards in UCLA history. I'll compile the lists for my, you know, those.
You've been busy, haven't you?
So we got Sidney Wicks, number one. Okay. Marcus Johnson, number
two. Why Sidney number one?
Well, Sidney was nice. Artis Gilmore, 6 blocks in the championship game. I've never seen MJ do that, so I have to lean towards Sid because he's 6'9". Doing that against Artis,
yeah,
literally glubbing
right
in the title game.
Well, and Sid's story with that is that Sidney, Coach Wooden wanted Sidney to front Artis Gilmore. So Sidney fronted him. Sidney fronted him in the first half. You know, and Artis was killing us.
Please.
UCLA.
Please.
Sidney and Curtis Rowe. They have to halftime. Sidney's like, and Sidney was just kind of dude, Coach, please. Coach, I'm playing behind him. Well, no, Sidney, I want you to front. No, Coach, I'm playing behind him. Let me play behind him. And Sidney blocked like 2 or 3 of his shots.
I mean, but goaltending and block, one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. Number two, it's you, right? 75 NCAA
champion. You can say Keith Wilkes.
I'm going you. Okay. I'm going you.
Yeah, Keith.
Number three.
Second one hand.
Number three, I'm going Ed O'Bannon, right? And this is why. Recency bias, but I'm going Ed. Number four, Jamal Wilkes. Number five, I got to give some love to Simi Valley's own Don McLean.
Yeah.
The all-time leading scorer.
Yeah.
In the pack to 2,600 plus points.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Donnie Mack doesn't get enough love. Number six, Curtis Rowe, baby.
Oh,
got to.
That's interesting.
Got to. Number six. Number seven, David Greenwood, 18 a game, 11, 15.3 rent shares. Number eight, your roommate. Your roommate.
Richard Washington.
Richard Washington, number eight. Most outstanding player in the 1976, 1975
finals. Yeah. 28 points in the semi against 28 against Kentucky in the final.
That's ludicrous.
Yeah.
He's definitely top 10. Yeah. Kiki Vandeweghe makes it in as 9 for me. This is my list.
Okay.
Again, it may differ from yours. And coming in at number 10. Mr. Soulville Foundation, Lily Knowles.
Oh, I like that.
Kid.
Yeah.
Honorable mentions, Tracy Murray, Charles O'Bannon, Jaime Jaquez, and Dave Myers.
Yeah.
What do you think about that list, MJ?
I like the list.
Give me your honest assessment. You don't have to, you know, try to agree with it.
Well, no, I mean, and again, this is personal preference. Dave Myers, because of the integral role that he played in our championship season in 75. He was kind of our heart and soul, our leader as a senior of that basketball team. I mean, we had a game up in Oregon, Chris. It was 103 to 101. He had 39. Get the Ducks, the Kamikaze kids up in Oregon. 103 to 101. No overtime. 40-minute college game. No 3 points. No 3 points yet. You know, Greg Ballard and Stu Jackson and Ernie King.
Monty
Shelton? These are Oregon, not Oregon State.
My fault.
These are the Ducks.
My fault.
Dick Harder was the coach. But Dave Myers, I try and find a way to fit him in somewhere on that list. But other than that, that's a pretty solid
list. So the amazing part about the 70s and all of the talent that Coach Wooden, back to Coach Wooden, as a recruiter, right? 6 or 7 top 5 NBA draft picks in the 70s alone.
Right.
That's incredible. Your team, when you talk about you, Richard, and Dave, you're talking about two number two picks and a number three pick on the same squad. I mean, how often do we see that in basketball? My question for you, what was it like as a player to have to play with guys that are just as talented as you, better than you? We talked a little bit about it upstairs, but like you got two other top 3 picks that you're competing against every day. What did that do for you, MJ?
Well, you know, iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. And I've shared this story with you and others countless times. But my first week of practice was the hardest week of basketball I ever had in my life at UCLA, guarded by Keith Wilkes at that time, later Jamal Wilkes. But Keith had it look. And man, I get mad thinking about it. Wouldn't let me touch the basketball, Chris. And if I got by him, Bill Walton was on the back line, blocking everything out of bounds and talking trash to me. This is UCLA. Get that Crenshaw crap out of here. This is not high school, buddy.
Did you talk back to Bill?
No.
So nobody would come to Bill.
I was meek. Instead of Meek Mill, I was Meek Marcus. I was Meek Marcus. Yes, Bill. Yes. But you know what I did? I wound up calling my mother.
I can't play.
We can play this off. It's okay to play that off.
I can't play at UCLA. They're too good. My father's like, "What's going on?" I was like, "Bill and Keith Wilkes, they're blocking everything. I can't get a shot off." He's like, "They're the two best defensive players in the country. You're fine." And so, I started. Now, I blocked Bill's shot. I blocked Bill's jumper in a 3-on-2 drill. That's goaltending. I was like, "Get that weak San Diego bull crap out of here. This is college, you know." So I was able to go back at him like later in the season. But it wasn't until I got my Bruin legs under me that I was able to feel like I belonged on this level. It was such an elite level of basketball with Coach Wooden and Bill. I mean, just sitting around looking around the locker room would just be so imposing and man, intimidating as a young player. So it was a whole different world for you back then.
Man, staying on that, you've played in these elite settings. You play for some seriously elite coaches. I like to segue to Coach Nelson, Don Nelson.
Yeah.
Winning the Chuck Daly Lifetime Achievement Award, Coach Carlisle gave it to him in the finals. Nelly,
yeah,
obviously the second in all-time wins, most wins in Bucks history, won 250-plus games for three franchises, right? I mean, that's incredible. Now, let me ask you this. Were there any similarities between Don Nelson and Coach Whitney from a philosophy standpoint?
The biggest similarity between Don Nelson and – so here's Nelly, my rookie year. Nelly would approach you as an empty vessel, like you didn't know anything about the professional game. And as a collegiate player, you really didn't know a lot of the tricks and the nuances that were involved in being a successful pro. And so he would kind of approach you as an empty vessel and fill you up with all this great old Boston Celtic knowledge. He'd always tell you, not how fast you run, is when you would run in transition. Hell, I was the slowest white guy out there on the floor, but I got a lot of laughs because I knew when to anticipate a rebound defensively and get that edge in transition. Little things like that, that Nelly had a really good insight on. And so Coach was the same way. Coach would have the approach that he had to really teach the game to you. So both were consummate teachers in terms of passing along the knowledge. Nelly, of course, played in that whole Red Auerbach system. I think he was coached by Red. He was coached by Red in the late 60s when he first got to Boston. And then Bill Russell was his next coach. Tommy Heinsohn was his coach. So he played for some great coaches. Coach Wooden had some great coaches, you know, back in his day playing for Purdue when he was a 3-time All-American at Purdue. So it's a lot of similarities in that sense, those old-fashioned kind of Midwestern values, even though coaches were a little bit more pure and a little bit more purity to Coach Wooden's values than Don Nelson's. Nelly liked to have a good time, liked to have a lot of fun. But both guys were guys who taught me a whole lot about the game of basketball, and I really have a lot of respect for them. Had a chance to spend time with Nelly in Maui. And this is where he's moved to Maui with
he's got a weed farmer.
With his wife, with his daughter. He owns all kind of businesses. He owns half of Maui over there, real estate-wise.
Literally.
But also grows Nelly's
Kush. He got coffee. He got Kush.
All that.
He got agriculture.
All that.
Nelly doing everything.
So he's over there chilling. Chris at his house overlooking the ocean. And Nelly's like, picks up a little pipe. Yeah, MJ, you mind if I smoke a bowl? I was like, hey. Do your thing. And then I say, now isn't this something? Here we are. 30, 40 years later.
Talk about it.
Talk
about it.
You're getting high, and I'm sober. I mean, who would have thought it like 30 years ago? But we played golf. He plays golf barefooted. He plays speed golf, him and his buddy over there. They play 18 holes in about 2 hours. They just go. You know, MJ, if you can't keep up, you know, we're going to have to leave you behind. And so he was still doing that at 80 years old, 85 years old now. And so just a lot of great memories playing for Don Nelson and some of the things that he meant. And Coach Wooden, the same thing. I mean, just in terms of the basketball knowledge that he instilled in me that I think helped me get to that next level. And Don Nelson helped me with that also.
I always found it unique that one of the fascinating things about Coach Wooden was, you know, his propensity to be play those smaller, versatile, athletic lineups early on. And Nelly kind of had the small ball thing.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily one didn't necessarily, but it's unique to for you.
Right. Well, the thing is that they both placed a high value.
Interchangeability?
On quickness.
Quickness.
Quickness was the key. Those Celtic teams, you think back on, you know, John Havlicek and Sam Jones, Casey Jones and Don Chaney and some of these guys that Nelly played with during
Hondo's
time.
Right behind
you. Yeah. No, that's Kevin Stickum from well, no, that is Hondo.
That's Hondo,
yeah, Kevin Stickum is playing.
Now, defense.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to take Kevin Stickum to the hole. Take his ass to the hole. I'm getting ready to break him off a little bit, but that's Hondo. That's an old Hondo. That's
the craziest thing.
That's on Hondo like 36.
Can I tell you the craziest compliment I ever got speaking of Hondo? I was at minicamp with the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah.
When they had Lenny Wilkins was the head coach. So I'm there with Jeff Shepard and Rashawn McCloud, all their first round. Jamal Williams. I'm just in my, I'm in best shape of my life, right? I'm about 6'5", I'm about 210, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just running the floor, going crazy. Lenny's there watching. I'm knocking down jumpers. Lenny comes to me, pulls me to the side. He's literally like, man, you run the floor like a guy I used to play with, John Havlicek. I was like, what? Then I had to call and find out what he meant.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand. And then I did a little research. I was like, man, that was the craziest thing someone's ever told me on a basketball court.
There was always a reputation that, you know, he was like one of the best conditioned athletes of all time.
That's what Lenny said to me, man. Lenny Wilkins. He was like, man, you run before I heard him, though.
Yeah. No, so, but again, the quickness aspect, the versatility, the willingness to try to fit your philosophy as a coach into the personnel that you have at your disposal.
Now, coaches don't always do
instead that. Instead of vice versa.
So like, they usually, you got to fit in here.
We got a system, son. You got to fit into our system. No. You know, if Bill Walton is a great high post passer, you know, you play him at the high post. They play him down low. He's got a mismatch and then can overpower smaller defenders. The Sidney Wicks and then Steve Patterson and Curtis Rowe, that lineup in the early 70s, they won a couple of championships with that lineup. You know, Steve Patterson was the high post guy because he could shoot that 15-foot jumper and knock it down. Curtis Rowe would work down on the duck move, weak side block, because he was so good at overpowering smaller defenders in the key. So, yeah, just that ability to adapt. Adaptability
is key.
Well, that's one of Coach Wooden's precepts in the pyramid. Adaptability, ambition, all that good stuff is something that that they both preach. And Coach, the pyramid, speaking of the pyramid, Coach always talked about competitive greatness. Be at your best when your best is needed.
Mm.
And that's something that Don Nelson learned as a Boston Celtic, passed on to us when he got to Milwaukee. We were kind of the Celtics light, if you would. Celtics 2.0 by the time he got to us in 76, 77. You know, his first year, 77, 78. My first year, his first year, 76, 77, he wanted to pattern everything we did after the Boston Celtics, even had the old Celtic assistant coach, John Killalea, as our assistant coach. So everything we did was kind of what Boston did. And so it was just a great learning experience.
But you could never beat Boston.
Yeah.
Except that one year.
We swept them.
That was a big year.
But look, you know.
That was a big year.
But think of their front line. Mikhail, Parrish, Bird, then they go
yeah, but you guys had a decent front line.
Yeah, we had
what was the difference?
Bob Lanier, 32 with Babby.
And old Bob.
If Bob would have been 2 years younger, I always said this, we would have had a much better chance of winning a championship, at least getting to the final round.
Who was messing with Mikhail back then? For your
well, I mean, you know, he was a tough, but he wasn't the Kevin Mikhail that you think of in the mid to late 80s.
What was he?
Was he coming off the bench? I mean, he may have been coming off the
bench. Energy, big shoulder.
Still the great, the same footwork, the great length, the great ability to control the game from the inside out, unstoppable in the post, but. You know, it was a pecking order back then. Cedric Maxwell was
cornbread
Maxwell.
He was
finals MVP in the early 80s against Houston. He was the guy, you know, that they'd run the ball through in the low post. So he and Larry Bird complemented each other, even though they were similar size. But Kevin Mikhail, once he started to come into his own, he became an unstoppable force. But those Celtic teams, man, come on. They were some of the greatest teams of all times.
Did you see where this new All-Star format is gaining traction?
The
international versus USA. Giannis actually was the first one to really tweet about it.
Yeah.
Kind of like, this is how the format should be. Then Adam Silver goes on, I can't remember what show he was on, but he kind of confirmed that. Sort of like the AHL's Four Nations format, if you will. What do you think about that format?
Well, look, man, I first, with all due respect to Giannis, I first brought this up to Commissioner David Stern. We're looking through the archives now for this interview for Fox Sports. But I interviewed David Stern in New York, and I brought up the suggestion that why don't you have the international players, mm-hmm. which was, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, I believe, at that time. There was some really great international guys.
Sure.
And Commissioner Stern's point to me was that, you know, there's so many that there's so many that they kind of bleed into each other. And So we don't really want to, you know, delineate international versus U.S. because we want it to be all one commonality in terms of basketball greatness. And so we'll look at other ways. But I like this. I like this aspect of it, because anytime you've got that kind of situation in the Olympics, whether it's the Canadian team with Shea and all these great Canadian players, or some of these European teams that they put together, the Spanish teams, or France got to the finals, right? The Olympic finals this year. Tough out to beat them for the gold. So now I think is the right time for that. And I'm not so sure if the United States players would have a chance to be that successful against a team of Jokic and Giannis and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, but you're only going to be able to name what? How many guys internationally can you really name that are iconic superstars other than the tops, right? So I think it's six, right? So you got Giannis, Jokic. Yeah. You got Wimby.
Yeah. That's three. Enough. That's
But you need five to play.
Yeah, well, you got the Nimhards.
So you're telling me you think that an international squad can beat a team of homegrown USA guys?
Like who's a homegrown guy?
Everybody else except them guys you name?
Yeah, but like who?
Let's go every team. Steph, KD. Let's just say two guys right now that turned it out the last Olympics. They're older.
Like 40 years old. They'll be 40 years old. I'm talking about what young, established, and homegrown players can you think of that compete with Giannis and Jokic and with the last, four, five, six MVPs have been, you know, Joel Embiid, who's he identified with now? I know he's been hurt on and off.
Yeah,
is he international? Is he U.S.? You know.
You make some good points.
You know, so.
You make some good points, but there's you're talking about, like, how many players in the NBA? There's 300-some players to pick.
Yeah.
Versus 10. That you're picking of the top internationals.
Yeah.
So if you get, you know, your JTs and some of these other guys, I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I think
the game is going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to add
an element
to the All-Star game. I'm kind of tired
of
this normal, it's all these gimmicks. Yeah. I'm tired of the gimmicks.
Yeah. What did they do this past
year? The points, I don't even remember. It was so bad that I don't even remember. Yeah. We were there, so I was there with Joe.
Yeah.
We were there. We went to All-Star Saturday night. The dunk contest, you know, it was, you know, it's still live, it's still energetic, but you just wish, segue to that, you just wish some of the stars with name brand recognition would take place in that event on All-Star.
Take place and play hard.
Nothing against Max, Mac McClung and all these other guys on the dunk contest, nothing against them guys, but, you know, I want to see some real dogs. But then on the game aspect, I think, man, people hate it, but you got to put some money on it.
Well, put some money up. You put $1 million each player, winner take all.
Since we're moving to overseas formats, right, you got to put money on the All-Star game and have bonuses involved. Yeah. I played overseas. We had bonuses involved in every single competition that we did.
Right.
And it mattered.
Yeah. And guys come alive when there's something at stake and there's something to play for.
I mean, look at the in-season tournament.
Yeah.
When they you get the $500,000, $600,000 or whatever for winning.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Guys, you know, it's a chump change.
Yeah, and I just like the fact that it was Giannis who gets credit for, you know, bringing that to Adam Silver. And I just like Giannis's his growth as a player in terms of the way he views the game, the way he tries to grow the game. I think he was in Brazil now or recently doing some things.
Giannis is in Brazil watching volleyball. Front row with his bros watching volleyball. Let me ask you this. A lot has come out about Giannis the last couple of days. What is your take on just all the scuttlebutt, first and foremost?
Giannis has been really good at using his leverage. And so the last two big trades that the Bucks have made have been in response to Giannis exercising the incredible amount of leverage that he has. And so he talked about bringing in better players. We bring in Drew Holiday, trade Eric Bledsoe, championship. Then he talks about how, you know, he wants to win more than one. We bring in Dame Lillard, get Drew out of here, you know. And so Giannis's use of his leverage has been masterful. So I've always looked at it from that perspective that this was a leverage play to get management as hamstrung as they may be in terms of the second apron and all the things that we talk about. I think it went under the second apron with the Chris Middleton trade with Kyle Korver. So we're under that. But the point is that John Horst and Milton Newton and all those guys, look, they want to win a championship as badly as the players do. No question. But this puts even more pressure on them to get creative, to do some creative stuff, to bring in a Gary Trent type free agent, you know, for a minimal salary and get masterful production from. So Giannis is so embedded in the Milwaukee community. He's got his businesses there. His family is there. He's talked about all his kids have been born there. He loves the slower pace to raise his family. He's as loyal as they come based on the fact that the Bucks, we talked about a David Greenwood pick number 2 and never reaching that superstar status. Giannis picked, 16 or 17, and nobody really gave him a chance to be this transformational type player that he's become. So that gives you an idea of his work ethic. So I'm not surprised at all. You know, I fully expect him to come back in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. As Don Nelson talked about with the Luka Doncic trade, you know, you don't trade that once-in-a-lifetime type transformative player. You know, you try and make him finish his career with you and then get his name up in the rafters.
Well, for me, the idea of actually trading Giannis was just something that I just didn't think anybody in the NBA had the assets to really get off. Yeah. Especially when you go through the history of some of the most recent trades, you look at the Miles Bridges trade,
yeah,
Paul George trade, and you're looking at 5 first round picks, you're looking at, you know, all type of assets. Some more Bucks news. I know that Kyle Kuzma is in the lab right now, Early on in the summer, locked in with his crew, Clint Parks.
Clint's got
a whole team of guys. They're out here in LA working out.
Good.
So Kuz is actually in the lab. Last summer, I didn't see Kuz in the lab this early. I didn't see Kuz in the lab at all.
Yeah.
Now I see Kuz in the lab, so I'm excited about that.
A little birdie informed me that Giannis has taken or will take the younger guys, Ryan Rollins and AJ Green.
Greece.
Bring them over to Greece.
Yes.
Work them out for a week or two, put them up, have a good time, do all that good camaraderie, bond building stuff that you do as young people. So when I hear a guy thinking like that, Giannis has donated a bunch of money to women's shelters in Milwaukee.
Yep.
He's really activating himself in that Milwaukee community. So I just don't see that those types of actions of being the actions of a guy that's thinking about uprooting and going to a whole other city.
And I think most of all, Giannis's recent Twitter activity,
the
Bucks-centric fan account, has really just shown us what time it really is. He's been amazing to the Bucks fan community online. His mom is even liking stuff from people.
Okay.
So, you know, he's all in.
Well, he's got his Bucks jersey, the big statue in Brazil. What is that statue?
Yeah,
the big statue. He's right there. You know, with a Bucks uniform. Why have a Bucks uniform? Why have any uniform at all?
Just have a generic Nike.
Or no, you don't. Just be there. But he's got that Bucks uniform to make a statement. So I think it bodes well for Milwaukee and the fan base and everybody that loves everything about Giannis that he'll suit up and show up on opening night next year. So that's so.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, again, we're down here at the LA Athletic Club. We're in the wooden award room. You see all the photos behind Chris of the ladies' winner, some of my favorite players. Caitlin Clark, you got Juju. I got the wooden award behind me and some of the all-time greats and Larry Bird and Michael Jordan and Ralph Sampson and Kevin Durant and some of the current winners.
Jay Redick is in the building.
You talk about a basketball environment. Does it get any better than this?
It does not.
Man.
I'm chilled. That's why I'm so hyped this episode. I'm like, man, we have to build it.
It's a lot of fun. All right. Here at District, old school, Marcus Johnson, son Chris Johnson. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.